that human beings have so much more potential and so much more going on with our consciousness than we normally think about. You know, we can talk about, you know, the telepathy or telekinesis or all those really kind of extreme things. But even after my NDE, I was really open to intuition, into seeing numbers like 1111. You know, all those things started coming up like crazy for me. And that drove me even deeper into, you know, if you will, the category, I guess you would call that, as paranormal things, but really into numerology, into meditation, into astrology, into all those things that are maybe extrasensory or ESP, some people call it. But I think there's so much more to our consciousness going on. It's very interesting that the ancient wisdoms and the quantum mechanics are talking about this exact thing, that we have a lot more going on with our consciousness than we know so far.
You're listening to the On Call Empath Show.
Welcome to another episode of the On Call Empath as we wrap up December into the new year. You know, I've just had a great experience, and I want to thank you for all of you for being here on my journey and all the different guests that I bring on every week, the expert guests. I wanted to change it up in this episode and bring in somebody very unique that's going to make you think. My next guest is Thomas Worm. He is a wildland firefighter who's going to be talking about his near-death experience in great detail and exactly what happened to him. We're also going to dig into the afterlife and just kind of have a little conversation about reincarnation and really what it entails. In fact, he's going to also talk about his Kundalini awakening when he had his big moment with DMT during meditation. It's going to be very exciting stuff, so definitely tune in. So without further ado, Thomas, how are you doing today?
Yeah, doing great. Thank you so much for having me on the show, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this. I know this is a little change in pace for me, and I'm really excited to kind of have you on and explain a little bit about what you've been through. I know you said you were a firefighter. You lost a good friend in a fire. You're starting a new chapter in your life, and you know. So if you want to just start out, just kind of let us know, like, what's it like being a firefighter, and a little bit about how you lost your friend.
Yeah, so you know, wildland fire is very different from the structure side. You know, we're in the mountains, we're flown in with helicopters, or we're hiking in deep into the wilderness, and all we really have is chainsaws and an axe and kind of your wits. You know, you're kind of out there like survival style, putting out these fires, and so it's really kind of man versus nature a little bit, and you really get tested. It really tests your mind, body, spirit, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so I've done that for the last 14 years and had some amazing experiences. I've had close calls and seen all sorts of crazy stuff out there. And, you know, specifically my friend that passed away, it was a really, really big deal for me. You know, it really struck home when he passed away, and it was sudden, and it wasn't actually on the line or anything. It was from a heart attack at the age of 40, which is actually somewhat more common than you would think in the wildland fire group, which is really interesting. And so some of it has to do with the way we're training, you know, the over cardio, ultra marathon type workouts that we do, as well as, you know, all the smoke and all the stress that we go through. So that experience really kicked off a major healing crisis for me, if you will. Yeah. I really went through it a lot the last couple of years.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, moving around with all that equipment, you definitely got to be in shape. I know it's not easy being a firefighter, especially when, you know, you're constantly under stress, and I can imagine what it does to your nervous system. But definitely, it's not an easy job. And, you know, after losing your friend, I'm sure that kind of really dampened your whole outlook. Now, how did you kind of start a new chapter of your health, and how did you do to kind of recover from a loss?
Yeah, so you know, first it was grief, obviously, and that grief lasted longer than normal, I would say, you know, and that grief eventually turned into this really hardcore anxiety about just death in general. And then that really turned into actual health problems, because our mind is that strong. And so I began going back to the basics of what I learned as a teenager and kind of, you know, what we'll get into in a little bit, but like meditation and yoga and breathing. And, you know, what's so amazing, I was really getting back into the meditation. Like I was meditating for 2 or 3 hours sometimes. And at some point during one of these large meditations, I had a significant spiritual experience is what I'll call it, out of body experience that was really profound for me, but it also made all those symptoms get way worse. And I was really in a bad place. And what's interesting is that drove me to acupuncture, which my acupuncturist helped me immensely with everything. I basically saved my life. But that mentor, you know, introduced me to NLP. And that was the major shift of, you know, learning NLP and then actually going through some mental emotional release work and timeline therapy was a game changer for me. And so that's what I'm doing now. And that's how I'm helping other firefighters is with the timeline therapy. And it's just so releasing and it changed my life so much. I'm very passionate about it.
That's awesome. Now, just kind of going back to your childhood, I mean, if you could kind of tell us a little about any major traumas growing up and then how it kind of led to where you are now and if it affects you in any way.
Yeah, it's so interesting how everything kind of builds on itself, right?
Yeah.
And my childhood was pretty normal. I mean, I guess one of the major things, like when I was younger, was bullying. I was bullied a lot as a younger child. And so there was some anger problems there starting to show up. But really, everything was kind of normal until my parents went through this major divorce. And when I was about 10 years old, maybe 9 or 10 around there. And so my dad ended up leaving. He basically, you know, long story short, there was a major incident with my parents where my dad ended up going to jail and going into a psychiatric ward. And that really shook me to the core. And it changed me like completely. And I went from pretty normal life to all of a sudden, you know, hanging out with the wrong crowds and, you know, doing, you know, it started with marijuana and drinking and those kinds of things, but it really escalated pretty quickly. By the time I was 12, 13, I was doing pretty hardcore drugs, nothing like shooting up or anything, but it was pretty extensive, which, you know, my grades were falling. I wasn't really performing in school, which all that kind of led up to, you know, my near-death experience, which was an overdose of pills and alcohol. And that experience was very changing. It changed everything for my entire life. And I would say it affects me today in a very deep way. And what happened that night was, you know, basically we had a whole bunch of pills and a whole bunch of alcohol. And it was kind of a normal night at a friend's house, you know, and I think I just took too much, right? Which was pretty normal back then. And so I went out the back door because I was feeling kind of nauseous. And, you know, it's the winter time in Washington State. So it's just rainy and cold and dark and windy. And I just remember kind of stumbling off the back patio and going into the woods and just collapsing. And when I collapsed, it was like everything went dark. And I passed out before and I've blacked out before when I was a kid like that, but this was different. And the major thing was that the blackness, it was so peaceful, but also like, it's so hard to explain because it was peaceful, but it was also like unknown. Like it's just blackness. It's just black. Like I couldn't really understand what was happening. And I never, you know, not that that's a huge experience, like not the white tunnel or anything like that, but I never really thought of it as a near-death experience until I started hearing things when I was older about this, about people having those experiences. And when I heard other people talking about it, it made me realize, no, that was a near-death experience. And the reason why I'm so convinced it was is because the next day I was different. I mean, 100% different. I never knew about meditation. I never knew about yoga. I never knew anything about that. But I started reading two or three books a week on that stuff. I started meditating and doing Tai Chi and Kung Fu classes. My grades, you know, spiked like crazy. I was getting 4.0s and all my friends were like, what happened to Thomas? He just kind of like, he's just like a monk now. Right. And so everything changed in that moment. And that definitely affects me now. It was an amazing, hard time in my life for sure.
I mean, I'm just going to stop you right there. I mean, just going through a near-death experience in itself, I mean, that's got to be an experience, especially after you kind of came out of it. You know, you're saying that you kind of changed your whole outlook on life. I mean, I have had people that OD'd and, you know, they just never made it, you know, growing up, you know. But then there are other people that, you know, tried suicide and then they never, you know, they actually recovered. And what they said is, like, a lot of people say that some people are, you know, they just see black darkness. And then other people say that there's immense light and love and peace and harmony. Did you experience any of that, like, when it was pure dark? Or was it just a dark of nothingness, of fade to black type? There was no feeling. Do you remember anything? Or was it after you woke up and you were like, okay, that was, you know, now I have a new mission in life? Where do you think that switch went off in your brain where you were like, okay, where is this coming from? How am I getting 4.0s? How am I like a different person?
Yeah. And it's so interesting because that experience, that time was, it was just blackness. It was just numb. It was just kind of this weird oneness that was peaceful, but it was also just nothing. And I've come to realize that to me, I didn't really have anywhere to look to or anything, you know, that I could think beyond. My mind wasn't really open at all. And I think to me, it was such a mind opening and mind altering experience that all of a sudden I knew there was something on the other side. I knew it wasn't blackness, but that's what I experienced. And so I really got interested in the paranormal and in what is on the other side. And I think it's almost, you know, yeah, there is no cliche kind of white light or anything with mine, which is so interesting. And I can say my out of body experience during the meditation a couple of years ago, like I was talking about, that was a whole different deal. That was very mystical, full of light. And it almost seems like it was a natural DMT experience or something completely out of body. And it was super powerful. And that convinced me that there is so much more on the other side, that there is a lot of energy and love and compassion.
Right. Now, there's been a lot of research, especially with, you know, people that research the brain and what happens as, you know, they've done studies and research on people that have been through near-death experiences. A lot of times they say, to make sense of it, they say that the brain shuts off and it gives like a euphoric feeling so that you don't feel any pain as you fade away. You know, some people say that there is some sort of link to that and that's what that is. But then other people just disagree with that theory and say, no, it wasn't the brain trying to, you know, produce these chemicals in my brain to make, you know, prepare for death. The body shuts down and it really relaxes you. And that's what people are experiencing. But in your case, obviously that you have no doubt in your mind that this is, there is something on the other side. I don't want to say like supernatural, but like something else more than us out there.
Yeah. I would say, I think to me, it became a realization that, that human beings have so much more potential and so much more going on with our consciousness than we normally think about. You know, we can talk about, you know, the telepathy or telekinesis or all those really kind of extreme things. But even after my NDE, I was really open to intuition, into seeing numbers like 1111. You know,
yeah,
all those things started coming up like crazy for me. And that drove me even deeper into, you know, if you will, the category, I guess you would call that, as paranormal things, but really into numerology, into meditation, mm-hmm. into astrology, into all those kind of those things that are maybe extrasensory or ESP, some people call it. But I think there's so much more to our consciousness going on. And when we look into a lot of the studies of Dr. Joe Dispenza or Bruce yep. Lipton and the quantum mechanics and the spirituality come together in kind of the mainstream YouTube mm-hmm. world, it's very interesting that the ancient wisdoms and the quantum mechanics are talking about this exact thing yeah. that we have a lot more going on with our consciousness than we know right. so far.
Yeah, that is like, I'm just so fascinated with this whole subject. And I know a lot of HSPs, highly sensitive people that do tune into this podcast and the trauma victims. It just seems that most of them have been through a lot of just a lot of trauma in their lives. And they become very highly sensitive. And they're able to, I wouldn't say they have powers, but they're able to be very sensitive to read things that just other people can't. And I've talked to a couple of those types of people, and very intuitive with just energy. They can feel other people's energy just by, you know, talking or hearing their voice. Or, I mean, it's really pretty interesting stuff. Now, with empaths, you know, there's also people that are empaths out there that do have this, you know, it's this so-called, you know, reading where they can harness the energy of other people. And so there are people walking on this planet that have, I think, more intuition than others. But I wanted to switch gears here a little bit and focus a little bit on DMT. If you can explain that to the audience and what that is and a little bit how that spiritual awakening kind of helped you, like with your and led it to your meditation and your practices.
Yeah, so DMT is dimethyltryptamine, and that is a natural occurring molecule inside the human brain. And it's also found in frogs and in ayahuasca and all sorts of other plants around the world, really. And the big work or study is a book called The Spirit Molecule by Rick Strassman. And he actually did clinical studies with DMT. And so what's really interesting about DMT is it's a psychedelic substance, if you will, but it's also naturally occurring. And I guess there's the theory, it's not really proved yet, that it's released when we're dreaming or released when we die, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the DMT is kind of like the mother of all psychedelics. It's like totally out of body instantly. And there's a lot of other people. I've never done DMT. I don't really speak to that. I just know that during my awakening experience, it was like this energy in the small of my back, like my lower spine, that just exploded up my spine and out of my head. And it was kind of freaky at first, and it was so expansive that I've had these visions that came up, and the vision was so profound of what happened to me was, basically, all of a sudden, I found myself above planet Earth. And I really, at that moment, I thought, well, I guess I'm dead, right? And so after that, I started floating towards the sun and going towards the sun. And I was just drawn there. And I went to our sun. And inside that sun, there was like this trail that went to the next star and the next star. And so I just followed, I don't know why, I just followed these trails of light, which eventually led me to black holes and their kind of trails of light. And I kept following these trails all the way to the center of the universe in this vision. And I wasn't really sure what I was looking at, but I kept zooming out basically and getting higher and higher until I just saw these sparks flying in these networks. And I was just hit with this, like, I was just seeing these light sparks from like this cluster of galaxies to that cluster of galaxies, kind of like all around me. And it just hit me like the entire universe is consciousness. That's all it is. And as soon as I had that realization, like really fully grasped it, I just got shoved like right back into my body. And it was really painful. And my healing journey really, I mean, my symptoms just got way worse at that point in my life. And so it really like forced me to start healing. So it was a very, I would say that was actually a very traumatic event for me. I mean, there was a lot of fear around that for a while. And it was powerful.
Yeah. I mean, I've had friends, they describe that as Kundalini awakening, where you wake the third eye. And then, you know, if you don't know, obviously, you know, if you're not, prepared for it or you're not ready for it, it could, really mess somebody up. And I've had people that have tried to awaken that Kundalini where it goes through the spine. And there's this whole science in it. I mean, and I'm not, you know, expert in it or anything like that. I'm just going off of what, you know, some other people have described, what you're describing, and they opened up that third eye when they weren't ready, and their life was upside down, and it was just basically like a stuck in a panic terror mode for, you know, and that's definitely very uncomfortable. But then there's other people that says pure bliss, you know, I'm a lot more enlightened. So yeah, I mean, that's amazing. Like, I mean, it seems like you've been through a lot, and I wanted to just kind of ask you, like, what would you say to someone that's listening on this, you know, this episode that might maybe be a skeptic and say, you know what, you know, I don't believe most of it. It's just woo or something like that. What would you kind of tell them if somebody asked you, like, hey, you know, it's hard to believe, the average person out there that might be a little skeptic?
Yeah, you know, I think the first thing is, you know, really, I want to respect their model of the world. You know, this is just my experience and what it means to whoever is listening. You know, that's amazing. Like, I hope you find some value in it. But for me, I think the convincer that was like so real was after my Kundalini awakening. There was, there were so many more physical symptoms of, like, my eyes were dilated constantly. I had a low grade fever. My whole body was on fire. I mean, it was just like I burned all the nerves in my whole body. It was like this major physical reaction for months. When I finally got into acupuncture, the doctor was saying, like, you know, yeah, your energy is like stuck in your head. We need to bring it back down to your feet. Mm-hmm. And when he started needling me the first time, it was like I could not control my body. It was almost like there was so much energy moving just from a few needles in my feet that it was, it was just this physical manifestation of the actual energy. Mm-hmm. And to me, I guess the other piece of it too, is it's my intuition and gut feelings became very strong. I mean, even stronger. And so, you know, how do you prove those experiences? How do you prove the NDEs, the out of bodies, the Kundalini? It's a very hard thing to prove, but when you experience it, it's without a doubt. That's for sure.
And that's what really intrigues me, is like the things that you're saying, there's bits and pieces that other people are saying, that have had near death experiences and have had Kundalini awakening, where their body was burning up and, you know, their eyes are dilated. These are, some people say they're classic symptoms and some people don't experience anything. So, you know, your experience is personal, and, you know, I respect that. And definitely there's a lot of people out there that have experienced kind of what you have, and they swear by it. But with that said, would you say, like, going through all this to up to this point in your life, what would you say that you learned this far in life after you had your awakening and your near-death experience? What is your before and after? Like, how did you think about life before, and how do you think about it now?
Yeah, I think the big thing was, you know, I was just trying to get by, make some money and fight fires. And, you know, life was pretty good until this kind of healing journey happened. And through everything that I went through the last couple of years, it was like there was multiple moments where kind of an integration happened, where the burning would settle down. I get these inspirational feelings of, like, you know, I have to write a book, or I have to start a podcast, or I have to do this. And it's just like a thought voice, right? That wasn't mine. So it was like almost communications. But what's so interesting is that, to me, out of all of this, it really comes down to unconditional love. And, and really being in tune with our highest self, or with that part that is just love and that oneness of love, and also just trying to be as compassionate and kind in life as possible. And that's really one of my messages in my book is using our heart to open up to kindness and compassion and move through the world with that compassion and kindness. Cause we need that all around the world right now, don't we?
I love that. And I'm glad you mentioned that. And that's one of the reasons I started this podcast. I mean, it feels like the world is pretty much falling apart, and, you know, with the pandemic and all the stuff that's going on the news, I think we need more people to kind of tap into that, their authentic self, and just know that it's not about material things. It's not about, you know, it's just like you can have greed and you can try to get as much money as possible. And then what? You know, then great, good for you. Like, how are you going to leave this planet a better place? And like you said, the love and the compassion and the kindness, you know, some people might call it source, God. Do you believe in a supreme being, if you don't mind me asking?
You know, I think to me, it's more of a universal consciousness, or personally, the way I've connected with this so much is through just fire on the landscape. And so I actually call it the infinity fire. And that's really funny, but I really do connect, I guess, through source, through fire. And it's been such a mentor for me that, you know, I think the infinity fire is how I connect. And to me, it's more like consciousness and universal consciousness and really everything really being just a shard or a piece of that universal consciousness, if you will, those sparks flying that I saw between the galaxies, that neural network of consciousness that's out there.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And I love, I mean, I can talk about this subject all day long. And, you know, I'm so glad that you were, you accepted to come on here and just share your story. I know that's, you know, it's not easy to, you know, especially with everything that you've gone through as a firefighter. And I'm sure you had a lot of close calls, being in forest fires. And I was looking at a lot of your pictures, and I mean, definitely I would not want to be in the middle of a, you know, blaze. And, you know, especially with my nervous system, you know, it's just, that's one thing I wanted to ask you really quick is like, is it adrenaline that keeps you going when you're like, let's say like you're in a burning building and you know, there's no way out. What goes through your mind at that moment? Is it the adrenaline that's pumping, or does everything go into slow motion for you? What is that like, if you can explain that to the audience?
Yeah, I think there's like this camaraderie and this brotherhood, sisterhood that comes over of like, you know, we're going to all get out of this together. And that collective kind of feeling is one of the main drivers, I would say, but it's also definitely hardcore adrenaline. But it's almost like you kind of, after a couple of years, you kind of live for those moments of like, yeah, that was a good shift, because, you know, we had to like drive super fast on crazy roads being chased by fire. It's like, yeah, that's just kind of a once a week thing and during the summer. So you just kind of get, you kind of live for those moments, and it's definitely adrenaline. It's the camaraderie. And I think it's just kind of that feeling of like, yeah, I'm a badass, you know, like I'm awesome.
A badass. But before we go here, I just want to ask you one final question. And I saved this one for the last, is that after everything you've been through, do you honestly believe in your soul that there is something, life after death? And if there is, what does that look like to you?
Yes, absolutely. And I think there's no doubt in my mind that there's life after death, simply because of my personal experience with timeline therapy and also clients' timeline therapy work that I've been doing, that it's without a doubt there's something there. Mm-hmm. And what that looks like, I really like the idea of Michael Newton's work, and he's kind of a famous hypnotherapist, but he did a lot of hypnotherapy on clients about kind of going in between lives and what's happening in between lives. And he found, you know, and all it is just a client's talking about their experiences, but what they experienced during these hypnosis sessions was that they were standing in line, and that they almost like the DMV, they're standing in line with a number, and they get up to the counter, and you know, the people would say, well, so what do you want in the next life? And they'd say, well, I want to break my leg and I want to do this and I want to do that. And I want to die this way and I want to marry this person. Like, okay. And they like stamp their passport and they're born. I know that sounds insane, but you kind of get to pick, like you get to choose.
I feel like this sounds crazy, but I think before we sign a contract to come on here and we, you know, these are the parents you're going to get and you're going to get this disease and you're going to die this way. And we agree to it. And I know that sounds crazy, but who wants to agree to suffering and pain and, you know, all that? But, you know, I think it's part of the growth process. Reincarnation. I mean, I'm looking more into that because there are people that they have done studies on that they, like someone from the other side of the world is talking about a person's life that never met. And they're claiming that this child that was born is that person that passed away. You know, it's just, there's too many coincidences. I mean, as far as reincarnation, what is your take on that?
You know, I think one of the famous stories is the child that he was really into planes and he was obsessed with airplanes, and especially like World War II airplanes.
Yeah.
And to the point where his parents were like getting kind of freaked out and they started, I'm not exactly sure how the pictures came up, but they found pictures of his old, what he would say was his plane that he was flying in World War II. He kept telling his parents, like, yeah, I was a bomber in World War II. Like, this is my plane number. This is the tail number.
Yep.
And they actually found a picture and he pointed out and named every single person, like, yeah, that's him. That's what his job was. And he was 100% accurate.
Yeah.
And so there's those things that have happened that, one, my personal experience with timeline therapy, but also when you hear stories like that, that's not just one story. There's tons of them like that. So,
how do you explain it?
There's just no question for me just because of my personal experiences.
Yeah, I saw that on Netflix or I forget the title of that, but I know that little boy, he was, you know, playing with airplanes and I remember that story. And, but yeah, that is some crazy stuff. And, you know, Thomas, you've been through quite a lot. It's an honor to actually have you on my show to kind of get your side of the story. And it does give me hope. It definitely lets me know personally that there's a little bit more to life than just what we're doing. And it is. We have to give back. And there's something to say about that when you're kind to people, when you're showing love, when you're doing something and expect nothing in return. There's something that happens and that's something money can't buy. But with that said, do you want to leave something, you know, positive with the audience before we take off here?
Yeah, I think one of the most important things that I've learned from all of this that I've gone through is that when we really open our hearts and we really open our, you know, if your heart chakra, really just open your heart center to your highest self, to, you know, like a shining light of even a meditation where you're bringing in golden healing light, that entrance or entry level of meditation, of bringing in healing, unconditional love and compassion, that's really the first step. And that's the most powerful thing we can do is just connect with that highest self, with that higher intention, and it will change your life.
And I am a big believer that energy never dies, even like when we're gone, like the energy has to go somewhere. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, you know, I think there's this big debate of, you know, where consciousness is made, if it's made in the brain or if it's external. And to me, I just think, like, there's no doubt in my mind that consciousness is external, that it's outside of the body somehow. Mm-hmm. And how that all looks scientifically, I don't know. It's just something that I've experienced personally, you know, consciousness is the new technology, you know, it's really important that we explore this avenue.
Yeah. Who knows what the future entails, especially with technology. You know, I've heard that one time they'll be able to download your consciousness and keep you here on the planet forever on a hard drive. I mean, there's some crazy stuff that, you know, I probably won't see in this lifetime, but they're talking about it. But yeah, before we go, can you just tell us also where we can find you, if you want to leave some information on your website?
Yeah, absolutely. So everybody can find me at mountainmindtricks.com. Mm-hmm. And I also have my own podcast called Sacred Ancestry Podcast. And you can find me on Facebook at Thomas M. Worm. And my Instagram is Mountain Mind Tricks. And a couple of books on Amazon you can find through the website. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Thomas, this has been a very... very interesting and unique episode, and definitely I enjoyed it because, I mean, like I said, I could talk to you all day about this subject because I'm so passionate about it, and I want to thank you for taking your time to come on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was fun to be here.
Absolutely. All right, guys, check him out, and in the meantime, if you can, please share this episode, give me a rating, and let me know how I'm doing on the Apple Store, iTunes. And with that said, stay tuned for the next episode, and we are out.
You're listening to the On-Call Empath.